You know, every time this Sunday comes around, it's always in September, if you know, as you know, if you live here. And by that, I mean the bishop's collection pledging for the advancement program. And the theme is from Psalm 106, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, his mercy endures forever. But every time we do this, I think back a couple of things having to do with talking about money and something we don't like to do and something I'm sure you don't like to hear. But I think of a woman in St. Maria Goretti's when I was up there years ago. She has since fallen asleep in the Lord, but she used to come to me, just a little minute of a woman, and full of the Spirit, just really zealous. And she would say to me at the door of the church, and she'd say it to me about once a month for years, "Now, you know, Father, I want to be honest with you. I don't tithe or give here. I give to T.J. Jakes. I go to his church right after I'm attending Mass here." "Oh," I said. "Well, why would you go to him after us?" "Oh, I like his preaching. It's fire and brimstone. He really tells it like it is. And besides that, you know, he talks about money every week. He really needs it. So I give him as much as I can every week. You don't talk about money here. So I guess you don't need it." I thought to myself, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. The other thing that comes to me, it talks about where is your treasure and what you do with it. You know the story well, of course. When I was growing up in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, there was this huge, massive steam trunk that was kept in the basement under a pair of steps that were leading down. I think what that steamer trunk would be worth today as an antique, solid. Apparently, my great-grandparents or great-grandmother had come over with it once upon a time. My Italian people came through Boston Harbor, not Ellis Island. And what was in it was a certain treasure, according to the Italian side of my family, in that my great-grandmother ran a silkworm farm in Italy, in Calabria. I never heard of such a thing. I don't even know what it looks like, but apparently it was quite exotic, although quite common. What was exotic about it is she also had the gift of spinning it into tablecloths and sheets and embroidered pillowcases and beautiful napkins out of silk, out of linen, out of silk and linen. And we were not allowed to open up that trunk because that was our treasure. You see, someday, we were going to have such a banquet. Oh, someday, we're going to have a nice family reunion. There were half a dozen huge tablecloths there made from her own hands, woven. And someday we were going to set the table and we were going to have this family reunion, or the first grandchild that was going to be born. Oh, we're going to set the table at the reception. How wonderful it'll be to have this exposed and passed on and see her hand. Oh, someday, maybe the first one that graduates from college at a party or dinner or celebration that we'll have, we'll set the table and invite every. Oh, someday. And twice a year, my Italian aunts would come to our home, my father's sisters, because the trunk had been willed to my father. They claimed that he was the favorite in the family. They wanted this stuff. I think my father could have cared less, but the will is the will. And they talked about having this banquet someday. And my mother was all for taking care of it. So twice a year, they'd take it out, wrapped in all kinds of fancy paper, and air it out and do whatever you do to such treasures over a period of years to preserve it. Well, time went on, and like anything else, we can fall into, I'm busy about many things, distracted. And distracted we were. My father came down with a fatal disease. Cousins got married and weren't interested in it. People graduated from college. Oh, I don't want that. I have a friend in Florida who collected wonderful homemade furniture with marble tops that she had imported from all over the world, worth a lot of money. When she died, she willed it to her grandchildren. Her grandchildren didn't want it. That old stuff, we prefer things from IKEA. There's no accounting for taste. Anyway, years went on, and that trunk sat there, I guess forgotten. And then it came time for my first Mass. And talking to the friars one day who'd come over to my home to help me talk about my first Mass at my home parish, and we were talking about setting the altar and who was bringing up, and I thought to myself, you know, we have that trunk downstairs. And my mother said, I don't know what condition it would be in. We kept care of it, but yes, we could finally use it. Oh, someday, we're going to take this treasure out, and we're going to share it in ooh and ah, and we're going to pass it on to others and talk about the people or person or persons that made it. So I went down, and I got the trunk. It took four of us to bring it up the steps. We took it into the living room. We had to break open the lock. God knows where the key was after all those years. We opened it, oohed and awed, mostly because of the musty smell that was coming from it. Dug open the papers. I remember lifting up this gorgeous tablecloth and holding it up and up and up, thinking, oh, this is a perfect altar cloth, and it promptly disintegrated in my hands. Dry rot. The whole thing turned to dust. We're not the only ones that turn to dust. Things that are neglected or not taken care of or just get old and have their time. But oh, someday we're going to share this treasure. We're going to have this family reunion or this graduation mass or this wedding or whatever. And it never came to pass. Matter of fact, there was something of an argument, I remember, when one of my aunt's first daughter was getting married. She wanted to use it. And my other aunt, who also had a first daughter, wanted to use it. And they started to argue about who was the oldest and who should have it. They actually had an argument and didn't talk about it to each other for months. Where your treasure is, there your heart lies. The whole point is, when you have something, you utilize it. Use it for the good of the many. The Lord lifts up the poor, the responsorial psalm says. By the way, the poor does not mean exclusively the economically challenged. The poor is a Greek word, anoim. I've said this before, but it needs to be repeated again and again and again. The Lord lifts up the poor. The actual translation is the poor and the pathetic. And by the way, that's the human condition because of the effects of original sin. We are poor and we are pathetic and we are in need of the treasure that flows from the passion, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ called redemptive grace. And for us also comes to us through channels of the seven sacraments. So we empty out our poverty in confession. And we're filled up with God's rich treasure that he merited on the cross. He deposits, if you will, in the body of Christ, the church, and we make withdrawals, if you will, from that grace that is to build on nature, so that over a period of time, there is more and more a sensitivity to conversion grace, to love of Christ, and for the Eucharist and the Word, but also mindful that to give to others what we've received is part of the commandments, because in the end, we are judged in how we treated and took care of each other. That in mind, the bishop is talking about gratitude for all that God does for us. I was at a couple of meetings for these years ago down at the bishop's office, and there was a lot of ethereal abstraction about how we would present this to the people of God. Fancy reasons that were way up here like a philosophy or a theology. And finally, somebody said, why don't we make it sexy? I didn't know exactly what that would mean. What they meant was, though, in the concrete, talk about where this goes. Put a human story to it. Make it livable, alive, imaginative, a feel for it. And so that was the beginning of articulating things like this, and then we're done. Or we begin with the giving for this, briefly. Your giving to the bishop's advance, and by the way, this is the fastest growing diocese in the United States. They are coming from the Northeast, the New England states, and God help us all, with all due respect, California. And because the jobs are here, people are moving here. Where I'm from, they're closing parishes and Catholic schools. In this state, they can't build them fast enough because of the incoming population that are coming with their needs, as well as with their skills and their hopes. And so some parishes don't have the means right away to take care of this influx. So for parishes who are struggling and in need of assistance, there's $70,000 plus that goes to help these struggling places. St. Vincent de Paul Society gets over $2,000. You should know that people in this parish have given $250,000 to St. Vincent de Paul, which is why I have said to them, please don't ask for money whenever you get up to talk about joining St. Vincent de Paul. You are well endowed right now. There will be a time when you will have spent that appropriately. That's what you are about. But people are very generous and very good here about giving to taking care of the poor. Secondly, I have to tell you, to my own fascination and disappointment, but I'm a realist, people have their own reasons. We have our second spring capital campaign to build that school, new cafeteria that we will be able to use for wedding receptions, funeral luncheons, certain parties like at New Year's or whatever. We needed $13.5 million. We have about $12 million. But mind, folks, only 18% of the parish has given to that. We've had a few big givers. And by the way, the one that gave the most is a new Catholic coming from the Southern Baptist tradition. And he gave us a number or a couple of million dollars. I said to him, I'd like to name the school. You have a naming option. I'd like to name it after your family. He said to me, well, Father, the Lord has made it possible for me to make that money. I would never put my name on it. It's for the glory of God. I was fascinated by that, and that's exactly what the scripture said. Although he's entitled to that, something that you do in church or state or whatever a company might be doing, the opportunity of having something named for your progeny that might come after you. But I was impressed because, you see, other religions talk about tithing and giving. When we do it, there's a certain, no, there they're asking for money again. They do it as a matter of course. When we give it, it goes out to all of the things on this pie chart. When they give it to their communities, it stays in-house. We are not a freestanding community. We take care of ourselves only. This goes out all over to causes in the world, and in this particular case, to needs in the parish. For diaconate formation, they need $120,000. To take care of the elderly priest, $10,000 is given to that. The TORs do not benefit from the collection for older priests. That is exclusively for diocesan priests. We have our own fundraiser through sending out religious goods and things like that. Seminarian education, $240,000. Catholic Charities, $302,000. It goes on and on. You've probably gotten the literature. I'm not going to go into it much more than that. The schedule that the bishop asked us to say to you was, early September, you receive the first mailing for prior donors. September the 11th, annual diocesan appeal announcement Sunday. It was the bishop's letter. It was also on our website. This weekend annual Diocesan Appeal Commitment Sunday. Pastoral homily on it and in-pew commitment cards are there. And next week, the envelopes will be in there again. So again, you have your treasure, whatever it might be. I remember when I would go home in the Punxsutawney Spirit, Jefferson County's only daily newspaper. There was this here and there column, and it would say, so-and-so, son of so-and-so, graduated from a school in Texas. So-and-so and so-and-so got married in Florida. So-and-so and so-and-so is home visiting his parents and all that. My dad would put it in that I was home. And I'd say to him, why do you do that? I came home to see you, not to run around seeing people. Why do you announce that I'm coming home? He said to me, I don't have my health, and I don't have any money. My children are my wealth. And then he said to me, shut you up, didn't I? So there it is, folks. We're laying it out. It's a fantastic diocese. It's a great state. Everybody, it seems, wants to come to Texas these days for all kinds of reasons. But the continued needs of both the diocese, the church at large, and our local community is there. I had suggested to the bishop, you know, Bishop, we are having our own campaign. Don't you think we should skip a year and not do the advancement program? And he thanked me very much and walked away. But I tried, folks, I tried. So I just want to let you know, hey, it's in there, do what you can. Remember, we have our own advancement program. That facility that we're going to open up next month is going to serve the whole parish for years and years and years. I'm disappointed there hasn't been a better response, but hey, inflation, you know what you have and what you're sparing. You know what you treasure and what you need. I can only put out the call for those to whom it applies. But the gospel and the Eucharist and the sacraments are our wealth. Spreading the good news is our mission, to spread that wealth. And for those of us who are able to make some kind of a sacrifice, that word means to make holy. You're being challenged once more. But it's actually a commandment about supporting your church. As a matter of fact, it's one of the precepts of the church, to support your parish, and if you have a Catholic school, to support the Catholic school. So I did my task, and I present it to you to think about responding to yours.